Welcome to Tour Today Ministries. My name is Grant Luton.
And I'm Robin.
And we're here to discuss another breadcrumbs topic, which is the four questions.
Right, because we are on the cusp of celebrating Passover.
Yes.
Probably my favorite time of year, Grant.
Absolutely. Except for the next holiday, which is then our favorite, and the next one, which is our favorite.
I know. They're all our favorite.
They're all great.
But last time, we were discussing the importance of questions and why questions matter. And, you know, I remember a few years ago when I worked at a local Christian school with so many great qualities about it, but in their Bible class, I remember feeling troubled because the teacher put the following words on the blackboard. We believe, colon, and then started listing for the students what they believe. And I remember thinking, something is bothering me about this, but I'm not sure what. And as I continued to think about it, I realized, wouldn't it be better to invite the students to explore what the word of truth has to say, yes, and then they could draw their own conclusions about what they truly believe. Mm-hmm. But that requires asking questions.
And that causes adults sometimes become very fearful when our children ask questions. But at our Passover Seder, and this goes back well over 2,000 years, at the Passover Seder, the youngest son who can read will stand up at the Seder table and ask four questions. And what I love about this is that when we do this with children and all the adults are listening to a child stand and ask questions, what are we imparting to that child? Mm. We are teaching that little boy or that little girl, we want to hear your questions. Your questions are important. Questions are powerful and we value them.
And also, it's the older generation there together with the younger generation passing it on.
Yes, absolutely.
And the question is the bridge.
Right.
It's so important.
Yeah. And you know, as I was thinking about and preparing for this breadcrumbs episode, I was reminded of Luke chapter 2, verses 46 and 47. This is the story where Yeshua was 12 years old. And it was Passover.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes. And his family had gone to Jerusalem to celebrate the feast, and his mom and dad were leaving, and they assumed Yeshua was with one of the other families. But then they realized he wasn't, and so they had to go back to Jerusalem. And it says in verse 46, then after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions.
I don't think I'd ever noticed that phrase
before.
Isn't that
something?
It really is.
And then the next verse says, and all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his responses. Hmm. Now, that word for responses in the Greek is usually translated answers. Mm-hmm. But you will find some places where Yeshua answers a question by asking a question.
Right.
So the better translation is responses. He would respond to questions with more questions. So questions are valuable. That's the bottom line here.
But before we move on and break down the questions that we have the children ask in the Haggadah during our Seder, I'd like to take a minute, Grant, and discuss, are all questions healthy questions? And how do we know the difference between a question that is opening up your soul to more light or shutting it down to a place of more darkness?
It has to do with the motive of the asker.
I think so too.
Because a person can ask a question, and on the one hand, it could be so that they can move forward at a truth. Mm-hmm. Or they can ask a question and it's to pull someone else back away from the truth.
Because don't you think that some questions aren't really a curious inquiry, mm-hmm, like a seeking heart? I've heard questions posed that are more or less an informer.
Yes.
That they're informing of their position, but in the form of a question, so it doesn't seem so obvious.
Yes.
Yeah. But there isn't a humble willingness. It's more of a defiance in the motive.
And also, questions, instead of just being having a wicked motive or a good motive, It can also be a sign of your faith. I just happened to think today, and I'm still trying to make sense of this. We find that Abraham and Zechariah, John the Baptist's father, both asked the same question.
And what was that?
Well, Abraham was told by God, you know, you're old, but you're going to have a child. You're going to have a son.
Mm-hmm.
And Abraham asked, well, how do I know this?
Huh.
And God answered it with a wonderful response.
And that was a fair question.
That was a good question. But it didn't come from doubt. But then you have Zechariah in the temple, and he's burning the incense in the temple. It was his scheduled time to do that. And the angel appears to him and says, you're going to have a son. Elizabeth is going to have a son. And he says, oh, how do I know this? And the angel struck him with muteness. He couldn't speak until after John was born.
For asking the same question.
Same question.
For kind of the same reason.
But somehow the heart was different. Two old men.
Wow.
No children. Elderly wives, both told by God, one directly, one through an angel, you're going to have a son.
Mm-hmm.
And for one who asks a question, how do I know it's okay? And the other one, it's not so okay. So God sees the hearts, and we need to make sure when we ask questions, we do so from a pure heart.
Like a childlike heart.
Yes.
I remember the master saying, if you want to come into the kingdom, you must become like a little child.
Mm-hmm.
And when a young child asks a question, it's from a place of humility and
curiosity.
Just want to know.
And it's from a place of humility. You have information I don't have. I want the information you have. Tell me, why is this? How does this work?
It isn't until they get older and the ego kicks in that it could be more of a mockery.
Right. And that's what we find in the Haggadah. We're going to look at two short sections here. One is where the youngest child asks four questions.
I love this.
And that's followed up by four kinds of sons.
Mm-hmm.
A wise son, a wicked son, a simple son, and a son who doesn't even know how to ask a question.
Mm-hmm. And this is ancient.
Yes, this goes way back.
Part of our Haggadah.
Right.
That's so interesting.
So picture yourself at a Passover Seder, and if you've been to one, that's easy to do. And the youngest child who can read stands up. All attention is put on the child. Everyone listens. And I know at our Seders, when this young child gets through reading the four questions, we all kind of smile and give him a high five and maybe a little gift for doing such a great job asking questions. If only we had that tradition, all of us, to reward good questions from our children. But here are the four questions. First, the child says, why is this night different from all other nights? And then the child will ask four specific things about the night. First, on all other nights, we eat chametz or matzah.
Mm-hmm.
But on this night, only matzah.
Right.
In other words, on other nights, we eat all kinds of bread.
Right.
But on this night,
there's
we only
no yeast.
Eat unleavened bread.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're having a Seder coming up, and you have one of your children asking these questions, let me give you a good answer, a good response to that. You know, when the Israelites were enslaved in Egypt, they got to eat fish and vegetables and leeks and onions and garlic that they mentioned, and apparently they had all kinds of good, fluffy white bread. But when they went out on that Passover night, they didn't have time for their bread to rise, so they had this flat, crunchy, tasteless matzah. And I think the lesson here is, which is better, to eat fluffy, tasty bread in slavery or to eat flat, tasteless, crackly matzah bread in freedom?
Hmm.
And a lot of people, I think, believe it or not, would rather have the fluffy bread in slavery than to have something that's not as pleasurable and yet enjoy it in freedom.
Hmm.
So, but that's the first question. On all other nights, we eat any kind of vegetables, but on this night, we eat bitter herbs. And of course, the Haggadah provides some answers to that, because we want to remember the bitterness of what the past held for us and how God has redeemed us from that. The third question, on all other nights, we do not dip even once, but on this night, we do so twice. Why is that?
It's funny because of all the four, this one seems the most cryptic, yet there is something really fun to discover about the answer.
It seems like a dumb question.
It does.
Yeah, it's like who cares how many times we're dipping our food into something. But what's interesting is if you look up that word for dip in Hebrew, it's the word taval. The very first time you find that word dip is in Genesis 37:31. And this is the story of how Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery. And they took his tunic, his coat of many colors, and they dipped it
in
the blood of the goat.
Right.
And presented it to their father. And that event of selling their brother into slavery is what eventually led to their Egyptian slavery.
It started the downward spiral.
Yes. Joseph goes to Egypt. Mm-hmm. Then the brothers go to Egypt. Then they come back and bring their father and their families, their possessions to Egypt. They stay there. They become slaves. Mm-hmm. The second time you find the word taval, dip, in the Torah is in Exodus 12:22, in the story of the Exodus, where God commands them to take hyssop and dip it in the blood of the Passover lamb, put it on their doorpost and lintel, because now they're going to go out in freedom.
Wow.
So the first dipping in blood
brought him in.
Brought him into exile, but there's a second dipping in blood.
It takes them out.
The blood of the Passover lamb that takes them out into
redemption.
That's
amazing.
So that's something worth bringing up in your Passover Seder.
Yeah, it would be fun to just kind of steer the kids toward those answers and see what they can remember.
And then, of course, the fourth question is, on all other nights, we eat sitting upright or reclining, but on this night, we all recline. Mm. Now, of course, we sit up in chairs at our Passover Seders, but in ancient times, the wealthy people would recline on their left side, and then the servants would wait on them. And this was the posture of wealthy people, people who are well-to-do. And it's saying, on this special night, we eat like kings and we behave like kings.
We remember who we are.
Yeah, and we remember God's promises of where we're going and what the future holds for us.
It's really neat.
These are wonderful questions. But at first, I remember the first time I read these four questions, I thought, well, these are dumb questions.
They seem irrelevant.
But I was the dummy. The questions were very intelligent.
Well, you know, I was thinking this week, too, about the reasons that we don't bother to ask questions. And I think one of the biggest reasons is that we assume there's nothing new to learn. Yeah. Isn't that typical for us just to assume that we kind of know what there is to know about something? Or I know there are other times I'm afraid to ask a question because perhaps the answer is going to require me to change something.
Yes.
So,
well, this is also part of the power of questions.
Right.
The answers to one question can keep getting better. So you can get an answer to a question, mm-hmm. and it's true as far as it goes, but then down the road, there might be a better answer to the same question. But if we don't keep asking the same questions, we won't get these better answers as we go.
Because that leads me to the third reason that I think we don't continue to ask questions is just simply complacency. We get to a place of indifference where it doesn't feel like it matters anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, that's so true.
So moving along in this discussion about our Haggadah for the Passover.
Well, one of the things, too, is that the four questions that we just read that are asked by the little child are really what kind of kick off the Seder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a cup of wine, and there's a piece of matzah, and there's some early things that we do, but it's the asking the questions that really kick off the Seder, because the purpose of the Seder is to pass on our faith and our beliefs and our history to our children.
It is. Say that again. That's so important.
The purpose of the Seder, and really of all of God's Moedim, is to pass on our faith and our values and our history to our children.
Mm-hmm. And when we say our, it's tempting for folks like us who are born Gentiles to think, well, is it our legacy? And how is this important for us to pass on?
Well, what did Yeshua say at his last Passover Seder? He said, do this in remembrance of me.
He did.
So he's telling us to do this.
Right. And he is our rabbi.
Yeah. And unfortunately, for many of us, when we think of the Last Supper, we picture Leonardo da Vinci's painting where Yeshua is in the middle of one side of the table and all the other disciples are sitting on the same side of the table, and there are no women and there are no children. That just isn't accurate.
So you mean they weren't posing for a painting at the Last Supper?
Yeah. Somebody asked, why are they all sitting on the same side of the table? Because right. They're posing for a painting. But they would have been around the table. Mm-hmm. There would have been children there. There had been the wives, and there had been women there. Mm. And it had been a family gathering. So we need to rethink of what that last Passover Seder was. But shortly after the four questions are asked and receive some responses, we come to this section of the Haggadah, still very early on in the Seder. It says, the Torah speaks of four sons, one wise, one wicked, one simple, and one clueless. Hmm. And at first you might think, well, where does the Torah speak about four sons? Well, I'll give you the passages. Deuteronomy 6:20. Exodus 12:26, Exodus 13:14, and Exodus 13:8. In these passages, you have the head of the home passing on the information of the redemption from Egypt to his sons. Hmm. And you see sons asking questions. And the rabbis over the centuries have framed these four questions that are asked by the sons as depicting the hearts and the maturity of the sons.
That is really, really interesting.
And so here are the questions. First, the wise son. What does he say? What are these commemorative laws, supra-rational laws, and civil laws which God, our God, has commanded you? That's from Deuteronomy 6:20. Mm-hmm. So he's asking, what are these? I want to understand. Explain them to me. Mm-hmm. And it says, you should instruct him in the laws of the Passover lamb. Quote, we do not serve any afikoman after the Paschal lamb, after the Passover lamb.
So he's quote. Considered the wise son?
He's the wise son. He really wants to understand. He okay. really wants to know. And what's interesting, he's not called the righteous son. The next son's called the wicked son. So you'd think it'd be righteous and wicked or wise and foolish. But it's the wise son and then the mm-hmm. wicked son. Mm-hmm. And I love, his mind went, Dennis Prager. There we go. Thank you. Dennis Prager, I love his response to that. He says, it takes wisdom to be righteous. Mm. You can't be good until you're first wise. Mm. And we want our children to be good. And if you want them to be good, help them become wise. That's the key. So after the wise son, the wise son, we have the wicked son. What does he say? What is this bothersome ritual service to you? And that's from Exodus 12:26. Now that may not be how your translations word it, but the wording in Hebrew is a little contemptuous. What's this to you? Mm. Why are you making a big deal out of this?
So there's an attitude.
There is definitely an attitude. Mm. And the Haggadah says, he says to you, but not to himself, in declaring immunity from the law. He has denied a basic principle of Judaism.
Like it doesn't pertain to him.
Yes.
Like I mentioned a moment ago, you assume that there's nothing more for you to learn.
Right. Yeah, right.
You know, Grant, when you mentioned the wise son, and then you were starting to compare these types of questions, I can't help but mention a verse from James 1:5, because we're invited to ask. And he says, yes. If any of you lacks wisdom, just ask of God, and he will give generously and without reproach. And
yes.
We forget that.
Oh, we do.
The importance of gaining wisdom by simply asking.
Right. God loves conversation. And he likes to hear from us more than we like to talk to him.
And sometimes it isn't necessarily asking a question in your prayer time. It could be asking a question to someone wiser than you.
Yes.
A sage, a counselor, yes. A mentor, a friend. Ask people who have been down the road and let them speak into your life.
Because God loves operating in the world through people. You know, there's something in me, and I think it's in a lot of us. We want God just to talk to us directly. We don't want anybody else to be involved.
Well, I just
want
men are more like that. We women have a better, we have an easier time having conversation between each other.
But yeah, it's a guy thing. But God is like, no, I've placed pastor teachers and prophets and apostles. I've given you my word. I've given you friends and family and parents. I want to speak through them to you so that they can share in my work.
What's that ancient saying? A wise man learns from everyone and everything.
Yes. So true.
So let's move along in these four types of sons.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious the direction this is going to go.
Then the third son is the simple son. He's just not real bright. He just says, Mazot, what is this? He doesn't say, what is it to you? Or why are we doing this? Or explain this to me. He just, what is this? And
so then, is it coming from a place of ignorance or just
kind of,
being just uninformed?
Not a very curious person. He just kind of goes along and
content
not very
not
self-directed.
To know.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the fourth son's the clueless son. And the clueless son doesn't even know how to ask a question. So you have to take the initiative. And so you begin to explain to him, you shall tell your son on that day, saying, it is because of this that God did for me when I left Egypt, which is in Exodus 13.
Is the clueless son considered the worst type of son?
No. The rabbis hint at a fifth son. And he's the son that's not even at the Seder.
Wow.
He didn't even bother to attend.
Doesn't even show up.
Yeah. At least the wicked son showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And he may act contemptuous, but he's there. And maybe something's rubbing off on him.
Mm-hmm.
And I know at times, if I can tell a story about our boys, we had two very healthy, all-American, red-blooded sons. And when they got into their teens, they just kind of wanted to look down their noses at some of this religious stuff mom and dad are involved in. But they were there. And we went ahead and did what we did and involved them. And sometimes we wondered how much was rubbing off. But it all was in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they may not show a lot of appreciation and participation, but it was all there.
Yeah,
and
they
it's an
caught
important
it.
Part of their lives
it
now.
Is, it is, and they grew to respect and love the things we love.
But you know, there's something else going on here. The rabbis also suggest that all four of these sons are in each of us.
That's the part of it that really fascinates me.
Yeah, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Druck, D-R-U-C-K, wrote a commentary on the Haggadah, which I really enjoy. And he said that the Haggadah is conveying that every person contains these four sons within himself. And there are times we can be contemptuous about what's true, sometimes very curious and wanting to know more, sometimes just saying, I don't get it. What is this? I start the ABCs. And sometimes we're just there. We don't even know how to ask a question. Mm-hmm. We're just totally flummoxed. But I know it myself. I've got all four of those sons in me.
Well, you know, in I think it's Isaiah, God invites us to come and reason together with him.
Yes.
And I was reminded recently that the way our minds are wired is we tend to shape our own reality by our own perceptions. And the danger
truth?
Of that is then we get into a thought loop.
Mm-hmm.
And we are only able to think the thoughts that support what we already think.
Yeah.
So we're creating a reality that supports what we're already kind of thinking about something. So to break out of that is to ask a good question.
Yes.
And God invites us to do that.
Because we, within our egos and our self-centeredness, we can get to where we don't really want the truth. We just want confirmation of what we already believe.
And we all are guilty of that.
We are all guilty of that. But life is change. And if we really want to be alive, there are still changes every one of us need to make, not just in what we do, but in who we are and what we think.
Mm.
And we need to always be throwing out the old things that turn out aren't so true, replace them with things that are more true.
Well, I found it interesting, too, that they say that these questions not only represent individuals, not only represent all the kinds of parts of our own soul, but also periods of time. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I was thinking about this quite a bit this afternoon. And I could just think of my own history. You know, I was born in the early 50s. And so all the dads, all my friends' dads, and my own dad, my grandfather, were very much involved in the war effort in World War II. And a lot of dads came home wounded, and they were veterans. But they had fought for freedom. They were like the wise son. They were committed to truth. They wanted truth. They were committed to freedom, democracy, and to our country. But then we went into the 50s where prosperity was just off the charts. And we had a spoiled generation come after them. And these became the teens and 20-somethings of the 60s. Mm-hmm. They were strung out on drugs and free sex, free love, they called it. And exploring Eastern mysticism and just kind of turning their back on God and on the Word. And these are like the wicked son. Oh, what's this to you? We know, and they had started to forget their roots.
There was a lot of mockery during that mm-hmm. age, right?
And then the generation after them, it seemed like they completely lost touch with their history. Mm-hmm. And they thought the world they lived in, the America they lived in the 80s, 90s, and Generation X and so on, they thought this is normal, and this is not normal.
So they didn't know enough to know what wasn't right.
Yeah. It's just like, what is this? Well, what is this you're talking about? They don't even understand. And because our history is not even really taught, and if it is taught, it's taught inaccurately in schools. And now we have a generation that is oblivious, completely oblivious to our roots and the beginning of this country, and we're losing our freedom. Because they aren't even asking how this country get to be.
There's a cluelessness.
There's an utter cluelessness. They don't even know how to ask. Mm-hmm. It was shocking. I was watching a video of a gentleman on a university campus in America, a well-known university, asking basic questions of students walking by. And he said, what ocean is on the east coast of the United States? And they didn't know. They didn't even know. And ask them where Washington, D.C. is. They didn't know.
Because it never seemed important to think about.
Wow. Yeah. They couldn't name the president. They were completely ignorant of the foundational basics of the freedoms our country's built on. Completely ignorant. It was really shocking. Totally shocking.
And then let's not forget the fifth son who doesn't even bother to show up.
Doesn't even show up. He's checked out already. Hmm. Yeah.
So when Messiah returns, how will he find us?
Yes. You know, he asked, when he returns, will he find faith on the earth? And whenever you see faith, think faithfulness. But I know you and I and many of our listeners are determined that when he returns, he will find faithfulness on the earth. We want to be faithful. We want to be true. So anyways, I feel like I did all the talking this time.
That's Robin. Okay. You had so much important information to share, and I didn't want to interrupt you. But hopefully all of us are going to enter into this Passover season with a higher level of awareness and being really sensitive to the people who are sitting at the table with us and welcome their soul their souls' questions and inquiries. And I just think that this is going to be the most special Passover yet.
Yes. Who knows? This might be the last Passover Seder before Messiah returns. Wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't that be something?
But I want to encourage all of you who are having Passover Seders next week or whenever to ask questions and invite questions at your Seder. Don't treat the Haggadah like some kind of program you have to, it's regimented, you have to march through. But if people don't ask questions in our Seder, I start asking them questions to get them talking.
And don't forget, it's not whether you have an answer. That's not the point to some of these questions.
No.
Just let's get each other thinking and expanding our awareness.
Right.
And the world gets bigger and brighter.
That is so true. Absolutely. Well,
Is that it?
Any last thoughts you
want to share? So, except I want to give our listeners a little hint that our next Breadcrumbs episode is likely going to be a special one. And we may have some visitors here to demonstrate how it is to ask questions. And they may be some kids that we know.
And we're going to call it Cookie Crumbs instead of Breadcrumbs.
Because it's going to be sweeter.
Yeah.
Right?
It's going to be fun.
Okay. So we're looking forward to that.
Yes. So until next time, we want to wish all of you a very happy Passover season.
And be blessed during this season.
Be blessed. So we wish you shalom and God bless.
Shalom.
Thank you for joining us for today's teaching. If the work of Torah Today Ministries has touched your life, please consider making a donation or sponsoring an upcoming video. As a video sponsor, you'll have an exclusive opportunity to memorialize a family member, celebrate a special event, or simply support the ongoing creation of similar content. Your tax-deductible contribution helps ensure that our teachings continue to reach all who are longing for truth. Click the link or visit our website to learn more.